Channel 1 over. And a continuation of the visit with Wade and Suzanne this Sunday afternoon, the 21st of May, 7 to 2. Channel 1 over. And a continuation of the visit with Wade and Suzanne this Sunday afternoon, the 21st of May, 7 to 2. Channel 1 over. And a continuation of the visit with Wade and Suzanne this Sunday afternoon, the 21st of May, 7 to 2. Channel 1 over, and a continuation visit with Wade and Suzanne this Sunday afternoon, 21st of May, 7 to 2.
Wait, fine. Way back. And so Wade said, yes, he thought he remembered, and he rode a horse back there. So they all struck out, and they got to the gate down there. And they climbed over, Marty went over. The other two children went over, and he always stood there and said, you don't have to climb the gates, you just go through. Open the side gate and walk through. And I remember what you said. No use spinning your energy climbing.
See, one thing, he wouldn't be quite up for climbing that gate. Now, Madiog, well, she just fell off the back stairs. I told her to quit doing it. And she's hanging out over the banister about 8 feet above the ground. There's all kinds of stuff down there. Beg your pardon?
You want some coffee?
Oh, no, thank you. That's ridiculous.
And
he wouldn't dare do that kind of thing. He'd be scared to climb over that gate.
Well, I didn't think he'd be scared. I just thought there's a simple way, you know, everybody else
well,
would come over.
Well, he can't really make that absolute direct, but he's got that combination.
Is that right?
He doesn't want to expend the energy, and he's also scared of that stuff.
Well, I didn't have the feeling that he was frightened, but now that could be. But anyway, he walked through like somebody, well, look, you didn't use your mind, but I did.
Well, I know Bill Preston.
I don't know. He's a short, stocky guy. Wife's named Betty. She's like a man.
Betty, Mr. Strauss' daughter?
Could very well be. I think she's local, too.
She drinks?
Oh, yes.
Yes, yes. I built a He's not short and stocky. He's pretty good size, isn't he?
Well, about, I mean, he's not tall. About 5'8", 5'7", something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
And he's got a 19-inch neck.
Good Lord.
And he said, he was in his cup. And he wanted to talk about something. So I had to sit there with him. He said, see that? Feel that. Feel it. See that arm? Have you ever seen Arm & Hammer baking soda? That's the arm. They paid me $10,000 cash for that. $10,000 cash. That's the arm. Arm & Hammer baking soda. The stories that come out of these guys, I have no idea if there's any basis for it. But it's still a funny story to me. It tells me all about how they took all these pictures. That's the arm. And he's a guy that's sort of really put down because he can't use his body anymore. One thing, he's getting a little bit old. And the other is he was a professional boxer, and he was really moaning because his hands are lethal weapons and he can't fight anymore.
10 pounds.
Well, legally, no, it's not just in town. I mean, if it's true that he's a professional boxer.
Yeah.
Well, hell, he told me he knocked out Joe Lewis in 3 rounds. Is it Joe Lewis? One of those older guys. One of the champions. In the exhibition match in the service. He said messed around the first round. The second round, he started beating up on him, made him mad. Third round, he laid him out. Flat out cold. Stories like that.
All circumstantial.
Well, he got off on it because he was complaining that he didn't want to hit Jack Herring. But he had to do it. He said, Jack and I have been the best of buddies ever since we've been kids. Jack's my best friend. But he kept on meddling me. Kept on. And finally, I just had to hit him. I didn't want to hit him, but I had to hit him. It hurt me to hit him, but I had to do it. Of course, he just flat break Jack in two.
Yeah.
Good Lord. Especially, he's in tip-top condition compared to Jack. They got into it one night at the store, and I think this was a wind-up about it. I forgot. I don't know what the argument's about. It didn't make much difference.
Mr. Weaver told me, I told him I'd been over and Jack would speak to me. He says you don't pay attention to Jack. I told you about that. He said he's not all with us. He got shot up and everything, you see, and his plumbing's gone now, and people just don't pay him any attention. Whatever he says or does, they just don't pay attention to him. But now, Bill Preston didn't have that view.
No.
I don't see how Jack holds a job anywhere anymore.
I think if he goes to work, he'll at least make like he's doing something.
Yes, but he don't have enough nerves in his left to get him through, I wouldn't say.
Well, he's hitting fewer and fewer days of working.
Yeah. That's too bad, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's ought to be an active person. See, this is Buster and Jack. And Buster is, I'm sure, in Buster's lifetime, he's never expended one day in labor like Jack has. Because Buster just paces along.
Yes.
And Jack, best I can get, he'll get things done, or has, and he's one of those proud workers. And he'd be proud to put on so many squares of roof in one day. And he'll come home and tell you about it.
And Buster don't do that.
Lord, no. Mm-mm. Buster's full of consideration. He's going to think about that a while. Then he's going to do it slow and easy, and then he's going to talk about it a lot more. And one job. He never hurries about anything. No way in the world. Oh, good Lord. I meant to print that picture up. You can use that. And that damn character, he skipped out the time I got my camera loaded, and I only got 3 shots of him, and he was too far off. One day, you know, Buster, you met Buster, have you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He can't work in the shop because one thing is too crowded, and if it's raining, it's wetter in the shop than it is out, and that, he's got a thing gouged in concrete. Ravine sort of to drain the shop out in the concrete. He went so far as to chip out the concrete rather than fixing the roof. And well, this is to his advantage, because if it's raining, there's no way you can work too well. And his creepers get all wet, because his creepers are nothing but pasteboard boxes. You know how most garages have a thing you get on, lie down, roll under? Well, he always uses a pasteboard box. And one day, somebody got off the interstate or something, and they had to have something done. He was fretting with it. It just started raining. And I wasn't paying any attention to Buster. I heard this, Wade, come here a minute. What is it? So he says, can you tie this up for me? And that damn fool, let's see, how do you have it rigged? Oh, he tied the, got in a yardstick, and tied that to an umbrella. And stuffed the yardstick down his pants like this. And he had me tie something around it. Because he had it tied up, but it kept flopping one way or the other. So I had to rig it so it would stay straight. So here he was standing out there with his umbrella tied up his back, right on the car.
That's hard to believe. Busted do that. Anybody been busted.
Yeah, you can see how serious he is about it, because he'd already quit by the time I got my camera after he'd gone through the process.
Oh, good
Lord. This one
here that took those pictures I showed you, he has a telescopic lens on it all the time, and he can take it at some distance away.
Mm-hmm.
Never gets close to it. Not his camera, he just borrows it from his roommate. And he says it'll print up or out.
Oh, yeah. They all have their purpose, these different lenses. Well, I had a normal on in the dog pen, and it was too narrow. I couldn't get back far enough. I mean, with a telescopic lens, I'd have been over in somebody else's house looking at the place to get anything done. Because it only covers a little baby area like that.
Well, it wasn't telescopic, either.
Yeah. Well, I've got, they stole my 200 millimeter. I've got 135. That's good to work with, but you have to be a good ways from people to get two people in it. Oh, I would say 10 or 15 feet.
Well, let me tell you, these things here, he does that with the greatest of ease.
Mm-hmm.
And he does like you do. He takes more than he needs.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't take many. And that particular lens gives him enough leeway, apparently.
I never noticed him changing lenses.
In certain circumstances, it certainly would. In both situations that we're in, any situations we were in, it wouldn't have worked. Because we were always too close to people.
Oh, yes.
And as it was, I was crowded.
Yeah.
And actually, I needed a big, wider lens at times. And just to give more freedom of shooting. Now, you got to be damned exact with that longer lens. I'm telling you, you got to be right on it.
Yeah.
And
not exact.
Yeah, you've got to really, be.
He particular. Does it just, as times I've seen it, just kind of walks around and takes his shots. And it's not a lens, I don't know, maybe it's big around, but it doesn't come way out.
Mm-hmm. He might have a zoom lens, which is a nice lens. So that changes, goes in and out. They make one lens that would be fine lens to use for this work. It goes from almost a wide angle to more narrow than normal, which is just perfect. And then you can adjust it. You can back off, or if you're crowded, you open your lens up and take in more area. That's fine lens. That's really a good one.
Yes, I'll take that back. I've had Buster talk nice. Except he never talks about, say, like Mr. Barr. Or he won't talk much about Mr. Weaver. He may talk about him some hunting expedition he had with him, but that's about all.
Yeah, he mostly grumbles about the people in a modest way and then gets off of them. Like a person like Barr or something. He won't.
Yeah.
He hadn't talked to me about anything they did. Of course, I hadn't opened that up with him.
Yeah.
He had any college talk to him about it.
Now, do they come in your shop, or you just have to be outside there where people...
Oh, he doesn't come in there much.
I don't mean Buster, I mean any of the other.
Jack Sanders is the only one.
Yeah.
Jack Aaron will come in once in a while.
Oh, will he?
But not much.
Yeah. Golly.
Sanders has got a lot of sense. And he's an old timer.
He's a wider.
No. He has that red and white pickup truck, and he generally wears work uniform with a green baseball hat.
Yeah. I'll find out who he is.
And he's got a lot of, he's on disability. He got hurt in an accident.
Oh, now, Andrew. You talked to Andrew.
Not a great deal, just a little bit.
But you've heard him talk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What talk about?
I don't really know a lot about him at all.
He didn't talk about anything in particular?
No, other than that one incident, and we didn't get further beyond that.
Well, I forget what that was.
Well, that was a baseball game, a softball game that they broke up, so that wasn't thing to be doing on their property. Came out with shotguns. Ran all the freaks off their property.
Out there where he lives?
Yeah, it's Herb. Louise, that's her name? Ms. Graham's property. The other side of the interstate down the dirt road.
Oh.
Just about a half mile down the dirt road on the left-hand side.
Well, that sounds like Andrew running somebody off.
Well, he was put up to it by his neighbors. And he came out with the shotgun and walked up there. And Jack Sanders was out there. And And George Farrar, who rents that house, who's really good friends, and he's, this George is a good guy to get to know, because he's made a special effort to get close to these people. To get that house, he shaved his beard off and cut his hair and went up and sat on Ms. Graham's front porch. I think he even went to church with him. And he was serious. And he's worked. He's planted a garden. He's repaired that house. And just really done it. I mean, he loves it. And he's, you know, he's not joking around about the whole affair. And he spent some time with her. I don't know how much information he's gotten. But he spent time with a number of those people around there. Well, he felt it his duty to be a neighbor. Get to know him. As opposed to being separate from him, like these other guys.
Oh, he just moved out of there.
Yeah.
And he didn't belong to them at all.
No.
But he made an effort.
A very special effort. He's quite a fine individual, from all I know of him.
But he wanted to be out there?
Yes.
In that community?
Yeah. He likes it. Except that's why it hurt him so much when they came up and... See, they came by after that ball game and told him he had to move out. After he'd done all the work, fixed the place up. And he thought he was in tight with them. But he forgot. He made a sad mistake. He didn't talk it over with Ms. Graham. And the word came around back door to her. She was off down at the creek fishing. And the neighbors called the daughters, and the daughters called the mother. And the time she got it, it was World War III happening out there. And she flew off the handle, see.
So that put an end to that?
Well, they reconsidered, of course. And so he's back in with them. But he was sure upset.
Now, what were they doing? Just out there playing ball?
That's all. There were about 50 people out there. There's 20 so from Newberry and 20 of them from Micanopy, and a bunch of local people from Micanopy. A lot of local kids, a lot of old-timer kids. And just having a hell of a good time playing ball. And we had a keg of beer. That's the reason we had it out there, because we didn't want to upset anybody in town with a keg of beer. And, you know, figured somebody could take offense using public property and have a keg of beer. So... they were just having a real righteous time playing softball, and I was umpiring, and we really had fun. I mean, it was really a sport, and there was nothing out of the ordinary going on. No dope or anything like that.
And Andrew had a shotgun.
Yeah. Well, he put the shotgun down after he talked to Jack. He crawled over the fence, and he started refereeing third base. See? And, well, we went over and talked to him, so it's fine. He went and put his shotgun back in the truck, got over the fence, and he was enjoying it. And then his wife and his sister came up in their pickup truck. And those ladies certainly do look determined when they're upset. Good Lord of mercy. Whew. I mean, you see that face, and you think you want to go. It's time to leave. And they... they yelled out there to get everybody off that land. They got a hold of Jack Sanders and went up and grabbed him. Says, Jack Sanders, you take all these people and that damned Andy Graham too and leave. And they blamed it on Jack Sanders, and he was invited out there and he was just enjoying himself. And bunched Andy Graham and Jack and the hippies and everybody all together and ran them off. Two women.
Now with five hitters out there.
No, there was two ball teams. You know, there was about 25 long-haired people out there, weird-looking people.
But they were minority.
No, I wouldn't say that. But it was way out in the woods, and you couldn't even see a house anywhere. There's no houses around. But these two women came up there and cleared that field out, and packaged up Andy Graham and Jack Sanders along with the rest of them and shipped them out.
Now, Louise's daughter's name Juanita.
Is Andy's wife.
Is
and the daughter.
Yeah.
I don't know them.
Well, Juanita, when she was growing up, she was a stud horse.
Is that right?
Yeah. Mm. Way around. She was coming. Andrews, who's his wife?
I don't really know.
But Andrew made peace with him.
Oh, yes. And then he came by and talked to me a week later and apologized profusely for this whole thing.
Oh, did he?
He was... He spent 30, 45 minutes standing out front talking to me about it. And telling me how the whole system worked.
What'd he say?
Well, his mother was off fishing.
Yeah.
And the neighbors called him up. And they reported there were 200 hippies out there exposing themselves. And God knows what all they were doing. You know, tearing down the fences. Everything. Just named it off. So he got in his pickup truck to go protect his land.
Yeah.
Well, he found out that wasn't right, so he didn't pay any more attention to it. He started coaching third base. And then the neighbors called the daughters and his wife. They called the mother and immediately upset her.
And he told her all that.
Yeah. And said, well, she's been a little puny too, hasn't she, I think. Well, anyhow, she's excitable, I suppose, due to her position or whatever. Anyhow, that's what he said. That she takes this and explodes it a little bit. Any sort of news like that.
Yes.
So she got excited quite a bit. And then sent the daughters down there to wipe them out, or the two girls, and they ran them all out. Including that Andy.
Miss Green wasn't there.
No, she didn't come till later on. No, just the two girls.
I thought maybe it was her that was on the warpath.
No. Well, she was upset, but she wouldn't have been if George had just said it. That's all he had to do to explain the situation. And if she'd said yes, of course, we could have been there for 2 weeks straight solid and nobody had said anything. But he would, see, that's how good he felt about him and how he thought he was close to him. That they wouldn't care. He was renting the property.
Oh, yes. He just, never occurred to him.
And he just made a god awful mistake that you just interject this foreign element like that without really plowing the ground for it, preparing your way.
Yeah.
That wasn't their way.
Yeah.
They don't like it. Mm-mm.
Now, you've not had any experiences with Sam.
No personal experience.
With any of them, where you have to plow the ground. You've just been right down Main Street and just talked to the ones who you can talk to. But you get exposed to something like that, and you'd flinch, wouldn't you?
Sure enough. Yeah, I'm right proud of George Farrar. Making that effort.
Yeah.
He's really a serious person. He likes the land, he likes the country, and he'd like to stay.
And associates with the people.
Associates with people.
Now, that's what I found is, you see, in the Good Earth magazine and all like that, these people that go out and cover their lifestyle, they'll live amongst the hill people, but they never associate with them.
No, they'll be separate.
They don't know how. They don't know how.
Mm-hmm.
They can't do it. So I don't know why it is.
Well, it's difficult at best. If you're not of that background, it could always be separate. It's a black and white thing.
Well,
you can get friendly with them, know them, but don't think you'll ever be accepted. Hell, Thelma Myers is still a foreigner. I think they've been there 17 years. She's still an outsider.
Has she been there that long?
For a long time, and maybe not 17, but quite a number. I mean, like closer to 10, anyhow, I'll put it that way. I mean, one side or the other, at least, in that block of time, that long. She was there a good time before I got there.
Oh, yes.
And she's an outsider still. She's a foreign rabble rouser.
Yeah. And she doesn't have. Now, Louise Graham comes in there, and they knock it around. bat the ball together.
I don't know what that structure would be. I couldn't pass any judgment on it. She's not the town structure. She's from outside the town, in a larger sense. Maybe Thelma didn't threaten her at all. But I think she did threaten the local people.
How?
Well, one thing, she did try to get into politics and get something done.
Oh, did she?
Early in the game.
Oh, did she?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. Well, I had more sense than that. But I learned the long, hard way. You know, when I came out here, I used to encourage Ms. Van Arnum to keep her children in school down there, and she did, as long as she could. And she found that they were so crummy that the children actually they wouldn't let the children learn when they got to school. What their object was to go to school and just prove to the teachers that they couldn't teach them anything. So she finally had to put them on a school bus. And she held out as long as she could, you see, and she'd brought up in this country.
Mm-hmm.
So she had to learn it. Well, she told me, and I didn't believe it at that time. But you've got to, you go around these little towns, the old towns, and you think, well, that'd be nice. But
yeah.
It's not anymore.
Old Walt Ebling was, they had a meeting the other night, they were trying to get a school back in there. You know, some individual from town there at the meeting, she says, well, I went to school in Micanopy and it ain't done me no harm at all. See, as long as they can pass through the school, they figure the school was good. As long as they proceeded all the way through it. But Law says it was tragedy. Those kids, especially when they took them to Gainesville as a group, poor kids were so really far behind. They weren't anywhere up there.
Well, I tell you,
Wade,
what I found is... These what I call the countryside, people who don't have too much education, go to college, it changes the personality and the whole mentality. My statement would be that if they live in the space. Now, you see, all these fellows have, they brought up like that. They can report on experience. That's that talk. It's their experience. They can talk, but they can't listen. So, you don't ask questions. There are lots of ways you can give the green light. But your pressure's got to be down. There's a whole lot of things you know you want to do about it. It's got to be casual and nothing to excite suspicion, you see. No interest, nothing like that. And but they can really report. Well, I've got, they just sit in here and talk 2 hours at a time without hardly any prompting or anything. Just keep going, just steady. They've done that. And you see what it is, it means that you see in the fiction, you see it's the writer who does the relating about these people, and they are their own writers. They are their own interpreters. And I don't think many of the writers know that. I don't know enough about Faulkner to know whether he knew that or not, as they could report as well as they can. Now, the prince of all the people is Tuck Mack. Tuck has a beautiful voice. He has a remarkable personality. He could do anything. And he just loved it. You see, and he caught alligators with old Brown. Brown disappeared before you got over there. And Henry Brown. he's one of now you see old Buster could open up on Henry Brown if he wanted to. Well, all of them were the Shropshire lads. All of them were princes of the countryside. You see, they didn't have to have any money. And this ball game, you see, that Mr. Weaver's talking about, they were in their own principality. This was their country. It was, I don't know if you use all the words, sort of failure. But Mr. Weaver was driving out over here with me one time, and he says, you know, these clothes, I hope nobody can see me. He's sitting in the front seat of the car there with me, and he had that old feeling from 1920 that he's driving along there in the buggy and somebody's going to see him. And now you see, nobody would see him, and they wouldn't look, and if they saw him, they wouldn't give a damn. Now that's, you see, that's the feeling that they had. And they still got it, some of them. And one of the things, you see, that your focus will keep you out of is that. There's so many of them, say, like the fella who lives over there and comes up there barefooted, retired now, and used to have that star route. You don't remember that. I forget his name. Always.
Spears.
He can do that. Why, he can talk forever.
Oh, yeah.
And it's interesting. And the only thing that makes him sharp is some of the present-day issues. If you can get him back, shift him back a little bit, see, and not bring him up. Now, here's the thing in the talk. There are a lot of little tricks I've found in the talk. If he's talking, you see, about that ball game in 29, you don't want to say, well, they don't do that now. You want to keep it back there.
Mm-hmm.
You say, that ball must have been something then. Something to keep the ball there. See, Suzanne hadn't taped enough and talked enough to learn that. In talking to you, she pulled you out a little bit. It's just a few little tricks. And I've done it so much, see, I can keep it back. And it's not, they don't respond to ideas, they respond to objects.
Mm-hmm.
And experiences. Which, you see, so you keep the ideas out of it, you see.
Yeah,
they don't ask questions. They don't go but question and answers. For one thing, you see, you say at this meeting they can't make statements. Well, it's not that their mentality is not up to it. It means it's a different mentality. They in Lincoln, you see, they criticized him when he got up there to the White House, the cabinet. See, they were right condescending toward him. They said, if you don't get him started, he'll give you an experience. But see, he had that, apparently, I don't know Lincoln, I'm sorry to say. But if you can, you see, some of those things. Now, I think both of them's interesting. Both of them is interesting. And with your personality, you see, you could, but now you see, you do one thing that cuts you off from it. You've got to make a point to talk like them and act like them and look like them, dress like them, you see, everything like that, you see, if you want them to talk.
Yeah.
And not to annoy them, you see. Well, the only reason I got long hair is because I'm too late to get it cut. And I wear old breeches, you see, gapping. Now, they don't mind the gapping breeches. You see how that goes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it depends on what you want to cultivate. There are a lot of little...
I've got your car blocked in.
I can get out those
little... You want to...
I can go forward.
You want to... You're going to do the screw next time?
Yeah.
At the end?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I got, let's see, this week and next week to do it.
Well, the last week, you know, it's sort of review week.
Yeah.
And on Friday, you can give them a little reading test on it, just so they get it. Now, you know, I can give you my points on it. You've got them in
mind. I know it's screwed pretty good. Oh, I know it's probably better than the others.
Good.
Spent more time on them.
Yes. Well, now, but you lead up to it, you see.
Yeah.
In the little school. You lead up to it and you don't tell them anything, and you've got that little statement or two in the foreword there before he starts, before chapter one, you remember, where he gives you all her disabilities.
Yeah.
And now you see the deceptive part of it. I think that little article of Cargill. I think that's the most serviceable one, because you see what he does is bring up this. Is that it?
I have to look. I know the article,
yeah.
But I forget the man who wrote which one.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, he has the that she's a liar. See, she's a what is it? Some sort of liar.
Yeah.
Pathological liar. Well, you see, what it is, it's not she's not lying, you see, because her perceptions are so great, and it's really what she's doing, she has that side to it, it seems, yes, but the thing, you see, that holds you and makes her Emersonian, you see, is that she comes up in chapter 6 right there quick, you see, with that great perception, and that governs all action. And it's, you see, that's as close as you can get, it's closer than anybody else comes to the first paragraph in self-reliance.
And it also kind of points out the change in the world.
That's right. And that's the reason, you see, through the governess, you see, their first thoughts would be just like the first thoughts of the governess. They'll be feverish and not like Emerson's. And you see, their only salvation, you see, is scholarly in Emerson's sense, where they can look at the institutions and see what the institutions do to them. You know, how we're doing. Well, you know that. But just little passages at a time, you know, like you've been doing.
Guy, I'm going to have to go too. Beverly's home, and I hadn't seen her much. I'm going to get these kids back. Matter of fact, I've told those other two, they didn't even tell the fair.
John went over, and the end of the visit was Wade and Suzanne this Sunday afternoon, the 21st of May, 72. Channel 1 over, around 600. And the end of the visit was Wade and Suzanne this Sunday afternoon, the 21st of May, 72. Channel 1 over, around 600, I'm guessing. The end of the visit was Wade and Suzanne this Sunday afternoon, the 21st of May, 72.